Okay. So, the topic for tonight, the question of how do people with, we'll broaden it beyond just who are celiac, but who have gluten intolerance of varying sorts, and what they do on Pesach, when, we have specific mitzvot, the araisa that you have to fulfill, that include ingesting wheat, or I should correct that, ingesting grain, specifically eating matzah. So what do you do? So this question has many levels to it. In each case, we're going to have to distinguish between people who have absolute, who have really full, let's, a little bit of background, right? Celiac is an extreme allergy to gluten. Right? Gluten is the protein that exists in grain that allows grain to rise. Gluten is a particularly strong protein. So, without getting into all the scientific parts, but as as it expands, leave it at that, the gluten proteins are strong enough that they can hold in the air bubbles, and that's why you get nice fluffy bread. But that protein, often people have a sensitivity to it or an absolute allergy. Now, the most extreme cases of celiac, so people cannot ingest any gluten whatsoever, including grains that don't naturally have gluten, like oats, which we'll talk about in a minute. People can't have them because sometimes there are remnants of gluten on them, especially in the modern the way it's produced in modern times. That obviously is going to be the most complicated. Then there are people who are not that sensitive who can at least have oats, which doesn't itself have gluten. And then there are people with varying levels of sensitivity to gluten who can in fact ingest even wheat, which is the highest has the highest gluten content of grain. They'll just get a little bit sick. And there are some people who can't have wheat because wheat has a particularly high content, but have some other grains like spelt, which have a high content but not nearly as high as wheat. So what we want to do is deal with with both people who have full allergies, right, who are celiac, who really can't have anything, perhaps even oats, and people who have varying sensitivities. Now the questions we're going to have to deal with, and we'll take them each in turn, is as follows. So, if somebody, I'll do backwards the way we're actually going to discuss it, but just so we see where we're going to go. So, people who have a mild sensitivity to wheat can, in theory, have matzah made of wheat, and they can maybe even have a kezayit, they'll get a stomachache. So, in order to figure out whether they're obligated to do that at all, what we're going to need to ask is, how sick does one have to get in order to be mekayim a mitzvah? And that's a bit of a complicated shayla. I have some classic sources here, but also at the end, I've put a small piece from two new tshuva by Rashi Weiss in Chelek Gimel and Chazasher, which came out only over the summer or end of last year. We have two tshuva on this topic. One, generally, how sick do you have to be get to be a potter from mitzvah, and the second one is specifically about people who are celiac on Pesach. So that's one question. Now, some people, it's very simple. It's pikuach nefesh if they actually have gluten, so they can't have gluten. So of the five grains that you can make matzah from, the only one which you can potentially make matzah from for people who are celiac is oats, because oats has no gluten. But this is a problem, potentially, and that's what we'll see. That'll be another question we see is, if oats have no gluten, should that make us wonder if oats are in fact one of the five grains? They're commonly understood to be one of the five grains, meaning specifically Shavuot Shulel, but that may not be true. It may be that that's a historical mistake. So what do we do with that? Are oats in fact one of the five grains? Is there even a theoretical possibility of a grain which you can fulfill your mitzvah of matzah with which doesn't have gluten? I mean, are oats Shibolet Shulel or not? We're going to deal briefly with the question of if someone, because of all the reasons we see, actually can't have any matzah whatsoever, so what exactly do they do with a seder? We'll touch on some of the issues, though there are going to be other issues they deal with. And we're going to deal with a particular potential solution called Greira, creating matzahs which are actually made of wheat and rice, which might help for certain people, but we'll get to that in time. Okay, so let's start with the question of oats, right? Let's take the most extreme case. Let's say you have somebody who's full celiac and cannot have any gluten whatsoever. So the only of the grains they can potentially make matzah from is shibboleth shu'ol, if shibboleth shu'ol means oats. Now, I should point out that, again, I mentioned this, but I'll just reiterate again. Certain people have such a high, such a strong allergy to gluten, they can't even have oats, because oats sometimes will have remnants of gluten from, especially in the modern production, they're often produced in the same facilities and whatever, right?
Contamination.
Yeah, contamination. Sometimes it's more than that, but at least contamination. So certain people, right, I got an email from someone in preparation this year who is so allergic, can't even have oats at all because of the potential contamination of the wheat. So then they can't have matzah. It's pikuach nefesh. End of story. Okay, fine. Nothing you can do. Like, what do you can do? It's pikuach nefesh, right? You can't have matzah. You can't have challah. You can't whatever. It is what it is. Pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh. Docha kol mitzvah shabbat Torah. Right? That's very simple. It's painful, but it's simple. Like that's the halacha. You don't have matzah. Fine. But most people, even people who are celiac, can in fact have oats. Now, this is I have cousins of twin girls who are both celiac. Right, that's what they do. They have oat matzah. I don't actually know if they have oat matzah now. They're like six, or maybe not anymore. Maybe I think they're bar mitzvah now. They were at some point six. Then I don't know if they spent the money on the matzah. It's a fortune. Last I checked, I had a friend in Staten Island who had this. It's $20 for three matzahs. So like, I mean, it's a fortune. But are oats, so is that even a possibility? Is oats, can you make matzah from oats? So is oats one of the five grains? So, okay. So let's start at the beginning. So, number one. Okay. did I do this in that order, or did I do it in a different order? We'll start at the beginning. Right. So, number one. What things can you use to make matzah? To fulfill your obligation on Pesach. So the five grains, v'chitim, which is undeniably wheat, se'orim, which is definitely barley, kusmin, which is most probably spelt, shifon, which is rye, and shibboleth shu'ol, which is something, right? Which is, we're going to assume for the moment oats, but that's what part of the machlokas. Okay, and that is how it is nivsok lehalacha number two, eilu dvarim shiyotim hem yidei chovas matzah. These are things you can use for matzah. V'chitim, v'zorim, v'kusim, v'shul, v'shul, v'shifon, v'haminog, likach lechatchilo, chitim. The minog is lechatchila to use wheat. Now, why should you lechatchila use wheat? So far, no one's questioning whether the other grains are the other grains, right? This minog applies even to barley, which is clearly one of the five grains. So why would you say you should only use matzah from wheat? So there's two reasons brought for this minhag. So the first is by the Mishnah Berurah. You look in three. Mishum du'chav v'ladim b'yoser v'ikam mishum hidr mitzvah. The first reason is simply that wheat tastes better. Right? Wheat tastes better, and we want you to enjoy the mitzvah. So we tell you to make wheat matzah. V'im ein lo chitim yikach l'matzos me'achad me'arba minim achoshev lo b'yoser k'desh yochol l'teyavon. But if you don't have wheat, so use one of the other four. So obviously, from this perspective, the minhag to only use wheat has no relevance for someone who has gluten intolerance. It's just a minhag; it's nicer. But if you get either are going to die or get extremely sick when you have wheat, so fine, so use one of the other grains. That's fine. There is another position that's a marsham. So you look at four. I just gave you the summary. David Cohn from Brooklyn has a very, very helpful article, which is available on the CRC website. It was an article in 2010. In the Journal of Halakha and Contemporary Society, on celiac, a guide to mitzvah observance. So he writes as follows. He says, accordingly, a celiac who is unable to eat wheat matzvah would clearly be permitted to bake and eat oat matzah. Right? He said, if the only issue at hand was this minhag to not eat, to not make matzah for the mitzvah, which is not from wheat, then obviously someone who's celiac could make matzah from whatever he wanted, make it from oat, and you would be fine. However, Marsham suggests a second reason for the minhag is based on the Gemara, which indicates that the chimutz process for some grains is different than for wheat, and we should therefore only bake matzah from the grain with which we have the most experience, i.e., wheat. The Marsham argues the reason that there's a minhag to only make wheat matzah is because we know how wheat rises, we have a lot of experience with it, and therefore we know how to prevent wheat from becoming chametz, and therefore we are always very, very worried on Pesach that what we're baking doesn't become chametz, and therefore you should only use wheat. So based on this, the Minchas Yitzchak says that one should not produce matzot from non-wheat grains, even for those who are unable to eat wheat matzah. So Minchas Yitzchak said, Rav Yitzchak Weiss said, okay, therefore even if you're celiac, you shouldn't have oat matzah. However, as he notes, although the responsum ends on a strict note, Rabbi Kestenbaum, who is the person who spearheaded the creation of oat matzah in Manchester, reports that when Diane Weiss was informed that there are some people who are so allergic as to be unable to eat wheat matzah under any condition, he agreed that such people were permitted to eat oat matzah. Rabbi Kestenbaum said he talked to Minchas Yitzchak. The reason he thought you couldn't use oat matzah was because he couldn't believe that anyone could have such a strong allergy to gluten that they couldn't have even a little bit of wheat matzah. Rabbi Kestenbaum explained to him that there are, in fact, such people. This allergy does exist, at which point he says, okay, well, then it's obviously fine. So this leniency is quite understandable in light of the Rambam. I'm really merely reporting a minhag to use wheat only. The leniency is even more appropriate regarding the oat matzot made by Rabbi Kestenbaum, since in fact he has now many years of experience working with oats and preventing them from becoming chametz. So the first question, right, is there a minhag not to use non-wheat matzah? So there is. The Mishnah Berurah says it's just because it doesn't taste as good. The Marsham says because we don't know exactly how long it takes for it to become chametz, so we want to be careful. But as Rav David Cohen notes, if that was the only problem for someone who actually has a wheat allergy, who actually can't eat wheat, so we would waive this minhag, and we would say that person is allowed to have non-wheat matzah. That's simple. The bigger problem is are oats one of the five grains? So as we mentioned, if someone is really celiac, he can't have any gluten. So the only one of the five grains that potentially he can make his matzah from is oats, is shibolet shuel. But that assumes that shibolet shuel is in fact oats. Now, is that true? So here things get a bit complicated. So you look at number five, the Gemara in Pesachim says as follows: Kusmin min chitin. Spelt is a subcategory of wheat. Shibolet shuel vishifon. Shibolet shuel, whatever that means, vishifon, and rye, min sorin, are a subset of barley. Kusmin, what is kusmin? Gulba, shifon, dishra, shibolet shuel, shivule tala. So the Gemara says, hani, in only these, orez vidochan, lo, but not oraz vidochan, not rice or millet. Minani mili. How do we know? Because Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, v'chein tanu Rav Yishmael, v'chein tanu Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Amar Kralos tochal lav chametz mishivas yamim tochal lav matzos. Because you have to eat matzah for 7 days, and we connect it to chametz, which implies dvar mavam lidei chimut, adam yotze behen yidei chovaso b'matzah. Only something which could, in theory, become chametz can you use to make matzah. Yotzu elu, which excludes rice and millet, she'ein b'ayin lidei chimut elodi sirchon. They don't actually rise, they only rot. So, the first clue as to what shibolet shual is from this Gemara. Right, what do we learn about the grains? All five grains have to be able to rise. Right? Because have you ever tried making rice bread? Have you ever tried making actual rice bread? So last year, we did a program for Ntivot, the science of chametz. And we wanted to show them a lot of these figures. So we tried to show them rice. Now, there's a machlokas in the Gemara, actually, whether rice is, between Rabbi Yochanan and the Chachamim, whether rice is a grain or not for the purpose of chametz and matzah. What's the machlokas? So if you look, mimitzius, rice will in fact rise when you bake it. Because it has a protein similar to gluten, which allows it to rise, which will hold the air bubbles as it rises. What's the problem? The protein is so weak that it can't sustain itself. So if you touch it or you apply heat to it, i.e. you bake it, it automatically collapses. Right? So it's flat. Right? It just doesn't rise. It rises for a second, but not in any permanent sense. The first thing we learn is that in order for something to be one of the five grains, it needs to rise, right? That's what the Gemara says. It's b'ayim li dechimus, lo b'ayim li dechirchon. So that works for four out of the five grains, because wheat, spelt, barley, and rye all have gluten, and therefore they actually rise to varying degrees. Wheat rises the most, because it has the most gluten. Barley bread, if you ever try to make it, is very dense, but it does rise a little bit. Rice bread is disgusting. It's absolutely vile. And rice bread often is like, put in 3 cups of wheat flour, then put a cup of rice flour so that it tastes like rice. But real rice flour is flat, right? It's flat and tasteless, right? Some of these elementary school kids actually tasted this horrible rice bread I made. I mean, I really made very simple rice bread. But oats is an interesting question, because oats, as we mentioned, the reason that celiac can eat it is because it doesn't have gluten. So does that mean that maybe it's a misidentification? Maybe it's not grain, because theoretically it doesn't accompany the sirchon. So who brought this up? So, you know, let's skip. Let's actually do this. Let's skip to number 10, and then we'll come back. The first person to note that Shibolet Shuel might not be oats was, in fact, the Sefer Ha'aruch, right? The Sefer Ha'aruch, written in the 10th century. Note that there's two possibilities. If you look at 10 on the right-hand side, Shibol, Heber, Bereish, Kilayim, Aseorim, V'Shibolet Shuel, V'Kusmin, V'Shuel, Shuel. So what is Shibolet Shuel? Two possibilities. Perish, Sikala, which is Sigela, which is a subspecies of barley, probably two-row barley. V'Yesh Omrim, Avena. Ha'asuya kizanav shu'al, and some say it's avena. Avena is oats. So the Aruch tells you there's two possibilities. Now the Rishonim divide, I gave you here in the chart. Rabbeinu Gershom and Rashi both think, as is the common understanding nowadays, that shibolet shu'al is oats. But the Aruch, in one of his positions, says no. Shibolet shu'al is segula. The Rambam in Kilayim, in the Perush Mishnayot, they're like Yosher and Rabbeinu Nathan Afa Yeshiva. In his commentary in the Mishnah, all say no. Shibolet Shuel is Segela, is not avena, is not oats, it's two-row barley. Now, why would you say that Shibolet Shuel is not oats? So one reason we've already seen is that it doesn't really rise, because it doesn't have gluten. But there's another reason. Look on the left-hand side of this chart. Okay, it's a bit hard to see, but look on this chart. So if you look, let's go around. The top right, that's wheat. Okay, so you see how it has stalks and it has like a, you know, grain at the top of the stalk. So then, if you look, if you keep moving sort of counterclockwise. So you'll see that the tall one on the left-hand side is Seora, that's barley. Barley also is the same way, right? At the bottom, you have a stalk, and at the top, you have a grain. The middle, the three on the bottom over there, Kusmin, right, spelt is the one on the right, which also is the same thing, right? It's a stick with a different type of sort of a grainy thing at the top. The same thing is true of Shifon, which is in the middle over there. But if you look at the left-hand side here, right? So now, these two pictures are the two possibilities of what Shibolet Shuel is. There's this one over here, right? Right smack in the middle. Right smack, that very dark one. That's Shibolet. That is Segela. That's two-row barley. Now you see, it looks very similar to the other four grains, right? The one on the right is oats. Right? Visually, oats look very different than the other four grains. Similarly, you look at number 11, the Mishnah in Kilayim says as follows, Achitin v'hazunin, enam kilayim zeh bezeh. Wheat and zunin, whatever that is, are not kilayim, one with the other. Haseorim v'shibolet shuol, hakusmin v'ashifon, hapol v'asapir v'abrukin v'atochu, pol alovin v'ashashuim, enam kilayim zeh bezeh. So, shibolet shuol and kusmin, right, are not kilayim zebizeh. Why? Because shibolet shuol, whatever it is considered halachically a subspecies of barley. But if you look at the pictures, oats looks nothing like barley, where two-row barley, segula, looks very much like barley. So clue number one is that a grain has to rise, and oats don't, because they don't have gluten. They're like rice. Right? Two is that the Mishnah tells you that shibolet shuel, whatever it is related to barley, which segula is, and avena, or oats, are not. The third thing, if you look at number 12, is even more. Shura zu shibolet shua. Shibolet shua is called shura. Why is it called shura? The lama nikra shma shura. She asuya kishura because it grows in rows. Now, two-row barley grows in rows. Oats do not grow in rows. So you have three reasons, based on the Mishnaya, to assume that oats...
What does it mean, grow in rows?
Like they grow in perfect rows. They're like physically, they like grow like rows.
Since they plant them, no?
No, like the physical, like the grain itself grows very straight, so it grows in rows, right? Like you see, it has like all these grains grow in rows, right? As opposed to shuel shuel, the oats sort of grow like this, right? Uh-huh. They grow like off at whatever weird angles. What?
Columns?
Right, they have columns, yeah, columns, rows, whatever. But oats don't. So based on the fact that the Aruch already tells you that there was a machlokas in his time, whether shibolet shuel was oats or segalov, two-row barley. And two, the fact that that oats don't have gluten and therefore don't rise, which seems to be one of the qualifications of the five grains. Three is that it doesn't look like the other grains. Four is that the Mishnah says it's a subcategory or subspecies rather of barley, which segala is, but avena is not. And the fact that it doesn't grow the way the Yerushalmi actually describes it growing. So there was a botanist a few years ago, now it's already several decades ago, named Professor Yehuda Felix, who said that it must be that the position of the Rambam and Rav Nosson Avi Yeshiva is correct. He added to that as well that historically, oats have not been found in any of the archaeology in Israel from that period, as opposed to segala, which has. I gave you a little bit of his piece there. That's in the middle of this chart here. Is his claim that it is avena and not segala. In 13, I gave you a broad summary from the Journal of Contemporary Halacha of why you would think that oats are not one of the five grains. So he says, furthermore, the translation of the term shibol chul to oats is difficult for many technical reasons that related to the scientific description of shibol chul found in the Gemara. The Gemara in Psachim that we've seen states directly that whatever exactly shibol chul is, it's a subspecies of barley, and this is cited by many Rishonim. Oats is clearly not a part of the barley family. It is a distinct species of grain, unlike segala, which is a form of barley. Segala and barley crossbreed, as we saw in Kilayim, and oats and barley do not. Further, the Mishnah in Kilayim indicates that shibolet shuel and shifon and barley can all crossbreed, right? Because that's why the Mishnah has to tell you it's not Kilayim to crossbreed them, which implies that you could crossbreed them, right? But simply false for oats, but true for segala.
Well, the Mishnah talks about beans also, right? Paul. Peas, what it was called.
Right.
So it's like, that's not very...
I think that's actually, you divide it, right? It's the first half. It's Shibolet Shua, Kuzmina, Shifon, that's one, and then as Pola, Shepira, Purkano, Atova, Kuala, Lovin, right? It's a division of the beans on one side. Mm. This ability to crossbreed is explicitly codified in Shulchan Aruch, Yardea, in Reish Sadi Zion, and thus the classification of Shibolet is inconsistent with the text of Shulchan Aruch. Indeed, if one simply looks at the plants and the grain themselves, it is clear that Oats does not even look like barley, unlike Segala, which does. Furthermore, the Jerusalem Talmud Challah 1:1 notes that shibolet shuel grows in a row, which is consistent with the definition of segala, also known as two-rowed barley, and not for oats. One can say with some confidence that oats simply do not fit the botanical description found for shibolet shuel in the Mishnah, Talmud, Shulchan Aruch, or later codes. This fact casts significant doubt on the correctness of the definition of many Rishonim who translate shibolet shuel into Latin and call it avena or oats. And this further inclines me to think that the Rambam is correct that shibolet shuel has to be a subspecies of barley. No less a contemporary authority than Sternbach note that our oats, which he calls Quakers, are not shibolet shuel, or at least lechumra, of you seconded by the Avchanuch. So, yeah.
You know, not to mention the people who are celiac and try and make challah out of oats. It's impossible.
Correct. So, mm-hmm. Right. So,
it's inedible and doesn't rise.
Ah, good. So, right, and that's, as we said, right, that in order to be a grain, it has to rise. Now, the truth is that if you go to a store and you buy oat flour, some of the oat flour will rise. Aye, it's a miracle. It's not a miracle. Some oat flour has gluten, conveniently, artificially added to it in order that it will rise. If you add gluten to oats, surprise, surprise, it will, in fact, rise. Okay. So, for someone who is totally, totally, totally allergic to gluten, the only option is oats. So, if Professor Felix is correct that oats are not one of the five grains, we're in trouble, because by definition, the grains have to have gluten. They have to be part of the grain families, right? And oat seems not to be part of that family. Mitzad sheni, right? That's one hand. On the other hand, the minhag ha'olam is to treat oats as one of the five grains, like the position of Rashi. And the achronim basically follow the position of Rashi, not the position of the Rambam, and have treated shibboleth shu'ol, oats as shibboleth shu'ol for many hundreds of years. And that's what he notes here. It's of course true that tradition found in the achronim to identify oats as the fifth grain, chayada, mishne brura, aruch ha'shulchan, is the common one of the last centuries, and perhaps reflects the distance Jews have socially experienced from many agrarian matters for centuries. One could make the claim, so what would you do? So let's hold it there. So does the fact that the science and the historical aspect of claim that oats is shibboleth shu'ol is problematic, is that enough to say, okay, we should poskin that oats are not one of the five grains and move on? So while Yehuda Felix thought yes, Rav Moshe Sternbach is willing to be machmer that way, Rabbi Broid in this article assumes that we should treat oats as not one of the five grains, others are going to say, no, oats are one of the five grains. Now, why would they say that? So they say that for a few reasons. One is because they might simply say, the achronim follow Rashi, and therefore I don't care what your modernisha academic theories say. It doesn't matter. Right? The achronim said that oats is shibboleth shu'ol, oats is shibboleth shu'ol, and therefore if someone's celiac, they can have an oat matzah. Period. End of story. The second way to argue on Yehuda Felix is to say, your science is wrong. Right? In theory, I'm okay with science, but it's wrong. So as we'll see in a moment, Rabbi Yosef Efrati, Rabbi Yasha's right-hand man, took both. First of all, he said, you're a kofer, because you're not allowed to question Mesorah Achron. We'll see, that's actually what he says. It's not like, basically. No, not even basically. That's what he says. In a moment. The second thing is he claims that he carried out a scientific experiment in which he baked with oat flour and magically it rose. So it must be that that Professor Felix is wrong. That one I'm a bit unclear about, because if he went out and bought oat flour in a store, of course it rose. It usually has gluten. So that's not really quite a miracle. But he does contend this. There are actually academics. Dr. Mordechai Kislev disputes Dr. Felix's archaeological proofs and his scientific proofs as well, and says the fact that we haven't found oats in Eretz Yisrael doesn't mean anything. And then he goes to the scientific ones. He's actually not totally convinced. But let's skip to 14 and 15 to see that. So Rabbi Efrati, in an article in Masoret, says as follows. He says, Chalila lahanif yad b'kabbalah u'b'maisa shem hamudim gidolim b'hora'a. He says, chas v'shalom, that we should challenge our Masoret, right, the achronim, who are the amudei ha'orah, we paskin like. V'shtaku ha'dvarim ha'ma'orim safek v'davar shen kabel v'tvedo Yisrael. Anyone who says things which challenge the minhag of Klal Yisrael should sink. Kvar hitzim ha'gon ha'gadol v'yona metzbroch zatzal latzeit b'charifut k'negen ma'orir ha'sefer Professor Yehuda Felix shekava ki zihui ha'shibolet shul k'kveker ha'inu zihui mut'eh. And Yona Metzberg has already gone out and yelled at all those people, Rachmana Litzlan, who, like Yehuda Felix, who argue that oats are not shibboleth shu'ol. Rav David Cohn, in a footnote in his article, takes this position as well. And he notes that this suggestion, meaning Yehuda Felix, is that oats are not shibboleth shu'ol, or shibboleth shu'ol are not oats, this suggestion was widely rejected by all contemporary poskim, including Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yashiv, both cited by Rabbi Efrati at the end of his article in Masoret 13, and Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. Additionally, Dr. Mordechai Kislev disputes Dr. Felix's archaeological and other proofs on academic grounds. Dr. Monk suggests that what differentiates the five grains from all others is that they contain beta amylase, which oats do contain, which allows the fermentation to occur before the proteases cause the grains to go rancid. I'm not fully clear on what that means. I sort of understand. But he argues that our suggestion that what makes grains grain is gluten is not true. It's the ability to theoretically ferment in this way. Refrati and Reikesenman report they tested oats and have found that they can become chametz as the five grains are supposed to and do not become rancid. Other grains are supposed to. Based on the above, we will assume that oats are shibboleth shu'ol and therefore suitable for all mitzvot which require one of the five grains. So the first question of someone who really, really can't eat anything, right, except for possibly oats, so is oats one of the five grains? So, as we've seen, it's a machlokes. Yehuda Felix argued that we should follow the position of the Rambam, and he's followed by some poskim. Rosh Sternbach has notes in this direction. Rav Shechter takes it as a safek, and Rav Shechter will not, for example, say mizonos on Cheerios, right? He will only eat Cheerios if he has a mizonos and a hadama, because he thinks it's at least a safek. And other poskim, like Rav Efrati and Rav David Cohn, say no. And the Rav, Rav Salvechik, said no. We follow our Misora, and it doesn't matter. And there are ways of answering up the scientific problems, the historical problems. Fine. Ray Broyd notes that even if, in general, you would say that oats are not the five grains, or you should be choshesh that oats aren't the five grains, such that, let's say, somebody who is not, celiac, can eat wheat, he should lechatchila have wheat or spelt or barley and not have oats, he notes that misvara, if someone really can't have any gluten, so what does he lose by having oat matzah, right? So, right, the only question is bracha. So if you're really concerned about it, have someone else make the bracha. But for sure, even if you doubt that oats are the five grains, if you have any hava mina that maybe oats, right, it's at least a suffix, that oats are the five grains, and someone can't have any of the other grains, but they can't have oats, see, what do you lose? Maybe bracha, fine. So let someone else make the bracha. So if someone is actually totally allergic to gluten, is full celiac, and can have oats, right? I think every posek will tell you that, so have oat matzah. The only question they'll argue about is whether or not you make a bracha. If you're convinced that oats are definitely one of the five grains, you'll say make a bracha. If you're not convinced, you'll say, so you're hedging, maybe you'll be mekayem the mitzvah, so let someone else say the bracha, fine. Ray Broyd in general suggests that for d'oraisas you should be machmir, that oats are one of the five grains, and machmir that they're not, meaning take all the chumras in, but for d'rabbanans he thinks you can treat oats as one of the five grains, because, for a series of reasons, but we'll not get into it. But basically every posek will agree that if someone really, really, really can't have anything but can't have oats, so then what do you lose? You might as well have oat matzah. Fine. Okay. Now, if you're going to have oat matzah, fine, but which oat matzah? So now go back to page one. Which oat matzah? Are there different types of oat matzah? So the answer is yes, there is. So, if you look at, so we saw already in number five, the Gemara said, in order for something to be allowed to be used to make grain, to make matzah, it needs to be something that could potentially become chametz. Now, there's two ways of understanding that sentence. Right? What does it mean that in order for something to become matzah, it needs to be able to become chametz? So how do you understand that word? Right? There's two ways of defining that sentence. What are they? Either the species, in theory, has to be able to become chametz, or this particular, right, this specimen in front of me needs to be able to become chametz. Right? Now, that question is a machlokes Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam in number 7 says, Ha'osa isa min ha'chitim u'min ha'orez im yesh batam dagon yotzei b'dei chovaso. So if you make dough from wheat and from rice, so if it tastes like grain, you yotzei. Matzah shelosha v'mei peros, if you make, right, matzah shira, you make matzah with fruit juice, yotzei ba yedei chovaso b'pesach, you fulfill your mitzvah on Pesach. But you shouldn't make matzah with all these rich liquids, because matzah is supposed to be lechem oni, and then you wouldn't fulfill your mitzvah. But the Rambam says fundamentally that if you make matzah with apple juice, so you're yotzei the mitzvah. Now what's the problem? The Gemara says that if you make bread with apple juice, it doesn't rise, right? It's not chametz. Right? It's matzah shira, but it's not chametz. So what does the Rambam clearly hold? The Rambam holds that what does it mean that something has to be able to become chametz in order to be matzah? He doesn't mean that this particular wheat has to be able to become matzah. He means that, in theory, the grain you use needs to be able to become chametz in order to be used for matzah. The Ramban in 8 says no. He said, "Bimlo mayim tebuklem yishum shekol shein obali dechim vot ein vot zin v'matzah." He says no. You can't make matzah with apple juice. Why? Because if you make matzah with apple juice, this wheat could never have become chametz because there's no water. By the way, when I say with apple juice, I mean with no water. Not with water and apple juice, I mean only juice. If you only use juice, the Gemara assumes that it won't rise, or at least not halachically. So you have a machlokas, Rambam Ramban, when we say that in order to make matzah, you need something that could become chametz, the Rambam says that means the grains you use have to be of a species that could become chametz, but not this particular specimen. The Ramban says no, the particular specimen in front of you needs to be able to become matzah. Now why is that important here? Because most oats, before they are stored, are roasted to be dried. And that prevents them from ever rising to become chametz. So therefore, if you use your average oat to make matzah, right, according to the Rambam, you are yotzei, because oats, assuming you think oats are one of the five grains, we already discussed that, in theory can rise. But if you think that these oats need to be able to rise, so then if you roasted the oats in advance to dry them out such that they can no longer rise, then even though in theory they could at one point have been made into chametz, since they now can't become chametz, they also now can't become matzah. Now how do you paskin? So that's a machlokes achronim. The Prima Gadim, the Shulchan Aruch Harav, follow the strict opinion of the Ramban. The Chayadam supports the Mekel position of the Rambam, but he says that you should only rely on the Rambam b'shas atchak. Okay, now why is this important? Because there are two bakeries, as of 2010, there were two main bakeries that produced oat matzah. One was in Manchester and one was in Lakewood. The one in Manchester used oats which had been pre-roasted. And the one in Lakewood used oats that had not been pre-roasted. So, Rav David Cohn says, L'chadchila, if you can get your hands on the oat matzah from Lakewood, then you should use the Lakewood one over the Manchester one. Though he notes at the end of his article, this was true in 2010, Barry Kestenbaum from Manchester promised that by 2011, his matzah would keep to the chumrah of the Ramban as well. I haven't checked into whether this is true, but at least at some point there were two different oat matzahs being produced, and if you want to be machmir, like the position of the Ramban, so then you should find the bakeries that do that. I gave you the piece in number 9, but I've summarized it outside. You can look at it inside. I'll just bracket that the Rav noted, the Salvechik noted, that this machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban, seems to actually depend on two shitot in the Yerushalmi in number 6. The Yerushalmi says that there's two reasons why you have to use something which is bali de chimutz. One is because it needs to bali de chimutz. The other one is because it needs to be something which is defined as lechem. So, the Rai Salvechik said, well, if the reason you need something which is bali dechimutz is literally because it's bali dechimutz, so then it sounds like the Ramban. It actually needs to be bali dechimutz. But if you think the reason you need one of the five grains is like the first day in the Yerushalmi, that only something which can become li dechimutz is called lechem, then that means it's not that this needs to be bali dechimutz, it's a type of thing which could call bali dechimutz. Okay, so to summarize where we are so far, if somebody can't even have oats because of the potential contamination, obviously they're potter, pikuach nefesh, end of story. If somebody can have oats, so then, theoretically, that depends on the machlokes the two deos, really, in the aruch, right, the position of the Rambam, which is, I'll make it nice, right, not Yehuda Felix versus, right, Reb Efrati. The position of the Rambam and the one day and the Aruch and Rav Nathan Ava Yeshiva, which was picked up in modern times by Professor Felix of the Ime, which is that oats are not Shibboleth Shu'ul. Instead, Shibboleth Shu'ul is two-row barley because it needs to be something which has gluten, which rises, which looks like other grains. So then, you couldn't be yotzei with oat matzvah, and therefore, the person just wouldn't be able to eat anything fine, and they would be patur because pikuach nefesh. If you paskin like Rashi, and like the Achronim, and Frati, Udi Ime, as Rav David Cohen notes, I think this is the majority, I don't know if it's the consensus, but it's definitely the majority of modern poskim. So then you could say, okay, if someone can have oat matzah, then they should have oat matzah. Lim maisa, everyone will agree that it's at least a suffix, so you might as well have oat matzah if you can. The only question is, if you're not sure that oats are really one of the five grains, so have someone else make the bracha for you, not a big deal. Which oats do you use? So as we said, there's a machlokas, Rambam and Ramban, whether in order for something to qualify as matzah, these grains needed to, in theory, be able to become chametz, or is it the type of species which could become chametz? Now, if it's the type of grain, so then all oats would be fine. If it's these specific oats, so then it has to be oats that haven't been preheated, pre-roasted, such that they can't rise, which at least in 2010 was the difference between Lakewood and Manchester. If you can't get your hands on the better one, so then it would be a shasat chak. Nowadays, I think, at least what they had promised in 2010, is that they would switch over to the Lakewood model. I assume by this point, what we'll ever get in Toronto is from the Lakewood and not shipped over from Manchester, I'm just assuming. So this is a theoretical issue, and at this point, maybe not even, right, not practical, but it's an issue to know about. Okay. Okay, so you combine it, right? Because it's very simple. You say no, because it's not. Because you'll say that the Achronim paskin like Rashi vis-a-vis oats, but the Achronim say you're allowed to rely on the Rambam b'shasat chak. So you just say we go like the Achronim. That's really what you would say. Okay, in a chanami, call it the Rambam shita picked up by the Chayadam, whatever. Okay, fine. Meaning, I'll be honest, right? I find this debate very strange because I understand. Sometimes I really do understand that, you know, a random academic choker comes out of nowhere and says, oh, what everybody thought historically is wrong, we should change halacha. So I understand. We don't do that. We don't just overturn halacha because some random person comes and challenges. I get that. But here, it's not like he came out of nowhere. Like, it's 2 days in the Aruch. It's the Rambam of all people, right? It's like, at least for me, of all like the modern academic machlokot, this one I don't understand why people got so riled up against Professor Felix. Like, how often do people get like people won't get angry at a Taimani if he says I paskin like the Rambam against all the other Rishonim, right? But here a professor said I paskin like the Rambam against Rashi, and the whole world had it out for him. So I don't ad hasof understand it. But okay, it's true the majority of Achronim paskin like Rashi, but I don't know if. I have to believe that the Chayyadim, if you show the Chayyadim, that Rambam said that, you know, by the way, this was lost. This is like a piece in the Mishnah that wasn't in some version. But if you show them the Rambam, the Aruch, both say that it might be two-row barley, and then you show them the proofs for it, right? I don't know if he would be... I'm not convinced he wouldn't change his mind. Maybe he would, maybe he wouldn't. I don't know. I'm not poskinning. By the way, right, I should have said that at the beginning. I never poskin, right? On this particular one, because I know it is Lemaiser for some people, I checked with Reifelder. What should I say is his position? And he said, give the shir, explain the positions, and then tell everybody who has a shayla to go to their individual post and ask a shayla. So that is what I am telling you. These are just to understand the machlokot. Okay, good. Good. That's what I hoped he would say. I mean, I hoped actually he would give me his position also, but he didn't. So, okay, you can ask him for it. I even saw him last night, he didn't tell me. So, okay. That's only because I was really running into Maariv. Otherwise, I would have, you know, talked to him for longer. Okay, fine. That's question two. So that's all for someone who their only choice is oats. But as we said, there are a lot of people who have sensitivity to gluten, but not absolute sensitivity. So, is there another option? So, one potential interesting option is what's called Greira. So, what's Greira? So, if you look at number 16, Greira goes like this: Ha'osa isa min hachitim min ha'orez. The Mishnah says if you make flat dough out of wheat and rice. So im yesh ba tam dagon chayeves bechala v'yotze ba adam yidei chovaso v'pesach. If it still tastes like wheat, so then you're chayev and chala, even though it's mixed with rice, and you can use it for matzah. V'in ein ba tam dagon ein chayeves bechala v'ein adam yotze b'dei chovaso v'pesach. If it doesn't have the taste of wheat, of grain, then you can't use it for matzah, and it's not chayev in challah. So this is a halacha we called greira, which is that when you're making grain that's going to be defined as bread or matzah, it doesn't need to be fully made of bread, of the one of the five grains, right, of wheat. It can be mixed in with rice, right? Now, what exactly does that mean? Right? How much, what's the ratio of rice to wheat that you have to use? So that's a machlokas rishonim. So you look at 17, I gave you just the basis of summary. Cause of a raivitzal, shehu, sheyesham dagon, kedei sheyochol kezayis b'chdei achilas pras. So the Ravid says, it has to be that within achilas pras, whatever that is, 4 minutes, 2 minutes, 4 minutes, 9 minutes, whatever it is, right? You have to, if you're eating this whole thing, right, this whole matzah, that it has a kezayis of wheat, right? That's how much it is. It needs to be that if you ate the whole matzah, because it has of wheat, b'chdei achilas pras. Now, if that's the case, this isn't going to help someone who has a wheat sensitivity, right? Because what you're telling them is put a full kezayis of wheat and then eat a whole matzah, which is mixed with rice and wheat. Okay. Cause of Rav Magid, avol midivrei haramban, nirash apil enshom kezayis b'chdei achilas pras, yotzei balu, fishim idin greira hu, shachitin gorin es ores. But the Ramban says, no, what is greira? Greira is magic. Greira is that if you mix rice flour and wheat flour, it transforms into wheat flour halachically. It's all wheat. It's called greira. What does greira mean? It was dragged along. Meaning even the rice becomes halachically lechem, part of the lechem. And it's only wheat and rice. And then the Beis Yosef notes that this is a machlokes harishonim. And if you look at Shulchan Aruch in 18, he says, "Ose isa menachitim in orez im yesh batam dagan yotzei bayidei chovato bepesach." And Shulchan Aruch he paskins seemingly like the position of the mekel position of the Ramban. Right? He says, "What is it? Greira is as long as you taste the wheat." Even if there's not kezayis b'chnei achilas pras, so it's fine. Now, how much is that? So, if you look at 19, Rabbi Broid, in his response to David Cohen's article, said, look, Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Ramban, that greira is good even if it's not kezayis b'chnei achilas pras. It just needs to have a taste of wheat. So how much is a taste of wheat? So, the Aruch HaShulchan and the Mishnah Brura say it could be very little, and he said he talked with food experts who did sample bakings, and they said that to follow the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan's understanding of Shulchan Aruch, it could be 90% rice and 10% wheat. So Rabbi Broid said, okay, if someone's totally allergic, they're celiac, they can't have any gluten, so fine, go with oats. But if someone can have, you know, just a sensitivity, right, they can have a little bit of wheat, so why don't you rely on Shulchan Aruch, right, and make matzah out of 90% rice flour, 10% wheat flour, and then have a single kezayis? How much gluten are you ingesting at that point? So he says that he thinks that's the better suggestion for someone who can ingest some gluten. Now, he does note, obviously, this entails waiving the kitniot for Ashkenazim, but he said that shouldn't be a problem, right? If the question here is, right, if you are doubtful of whether oats are in fact one of the grains, right, the five grains, and you have this solution based on Shulchan Aruch that would allow a person with gluten intolerance but not actual celiac to have matzah, so at least for matzah's mitzvah, that should override the minhag of kitniot.
Why not just use oats at that point?
What?
Why don't you use oats and wheat?
Oh no, because it's, because we paskin it's dafka. It's dafka right then, right? Because it's only that
the
mixture that works.
Work on rice and wheat,
correct.
Not on oats
correct. Why? It's a very interesting question. The magic of greira is wheat and rice. Why is a different story, but that's the answer to that, is because it's a magic of wheat and rice. Because
I mean, some people, if the kind of the normative view is that anyways.
Oh no, in a chanami, if you're convinced that for sure, if you're convinced that oats are one of the five grains, or you're at least nota in that direction, yeah. So then mix it, because then it's not meaning greira,
yeah.
Right? You're not even using greira. You're right. Reb Roy says, okay, but well, let's say you really do doubt whether oats are one of the five grains at all. So then use, right? Then you should use Gera and use, because that the Mishnah already says is for sure good. Reb David Cohn responded, in the response to the response, right? He said in an earlier version of the article, he did actually suggest this, because it's very fancy. It's a very fancy lumdus, and he liked it. But then he said he deleted it from the article for a few reasons. He said, first of all, it's very nice theoretically, but there's no baker in the world that makes this matzah. So you can talk from today till tomorrow, right? But no one makes it. So you can suggest they make it, but if you're telling someone lemaisa, what should you do? This is not an option on the table. Right? It's nice to talk about in theory, and maybe if there's a large enough group of people who believe what Professor Felix said and don't think that oats is one of the grains and like this suggestion, they'll build their own bakery, right? But the number of people who are more academically inclined and have gluten intolerance, right, that are going to build a bakery, David Cohn said, I just took it out because, like, I mean, it's very nice. It's very lumdishly. Besides, he added that he's convinced that oats, as Ellie said, most of modern poskim think that oats are one of the five grains, so what's the point of going through this whole, right, complicated svara of Gera if you think that oats are one of the five grains? It's not an issue. But that's another theoretical possibility on the table, which is if you don't think that oats are one of the five grains, and you have somebody who has gluten sensitivity but is not fully allergic, not celiac, so you could, in theory, make such a matzah. No one makes such a matzah, but you could, in theory, make such a matzah. Okay, fine.
And give up on kidneys.
What? And give up a right for the matzah's mitzvah, yeah, in a chanami. Now, everyone does agree, though. This everyone does agree. The next thing I'm about to say, I think everyone agrees with this. I can't imagine anyone disagrees with this, but I can't say nobody does. If someone really does have, right, so let's go down in gradations, right? There are people who can't have anything, can't even have oats because of contamination. There's some people who can have oats, but they can't have any of the other grains. There's some people who have intolerance, so they have to have minimal. Okay. So some people, really, really just minimal. So right, they have minimal allergies, so they can't have a lot of wheat. They can have a little bit of wheat. So some of them can really just have plain wheat matzah. But they can't have too much of it. So here, basically everyone I've seen has said, look, I understand that in Pesach we all get our cards with huge shiurim of kizaisim, and we have five kizaisim, right? We're machmir, we have two at motzi matzah and one derabbanan karech and two at afikomen, right? And we all do chazanish shiur, right? They all say Rav Asher Weiss or David Cohn, right? They all say, but for such a person who's really going to get sick, so they should rely on the most makil shitas, right? They should paskin like Rav Chaim Noah, right, and have smaller kizaisim, right? Which, at some point, if I remember correctly, but I may, don't quote me on it, right, Willig said that if push came to shove and someone really got sick, he would tell them that the most makel shita they could rely on is a kizayis is a tenth of a machine matzah, right? Which is really not a lot of matzah, right? And it's nothing. Yeah, it's the size of an olive. That's what it is. Yeah, bidiuk, right? You know, shocking, right? Wow, who ever thought of that? They also note that how many kazesim should you have? One. And which one? And this is the clever one? Ah, no. So they all say afikomen. Why? Because, right, because because you don't want to have anything after matzah. Because the halacha is you should eat it al hasova. So David Cohn and Rav Asher Weiss both say that if you're going to skip and you're only going to do one, obviously if you can do more, so do two. Do one of motzi matzah and skip korech the rabbanan.
But you can do afikomen, and that's your motzi matzah.
No, correct. You're right. No, meaning do everything at the end of the suda. That's what they say.
Yeah.
Right. Nechonami is do everything. Meaning afikomen. Meaning skip everything. Have one kizayis at the end of the seder, and that's it. Your yote motzi matzah, your motzi afikomen, and that's what they say. If you can do that, so fine. Fine, that's what you should do. Now, so that depends, right? If you take the most machmir shita, what is it, a whole matzah, half a matzah, third? I've heard half, third. The more makel shita, an olive, I don't know how much that is, whatever.
It depends also.
Yeah.
If
You know? How much? So, right, no, you're a machine. So, the thing, I don't know what that is. Right, yeah, so, I don't know, a 15th, a 20th, I don't know. An olive size. That's what I really said, right? Like I said, if push comes to shove, tell people. An olive is an olive, right? Right. So, right, I'm saying, I can't tell you. I don't know. You have to figure it out. It's whatever it is, an olive. I don't know, however much an olive is. Okay. I should just note, in 21, the Ber Halacha just says, if somebody really can't have anything, can't have matzah, as we've talked about, so the Chayadam writes that his bracha at Asher Galanu changes. And he says, right, he says, Ein Mishnah Berurah L'Inyan Chol Hashenu Yochol Echol K'zayis Matzah Kozbe Chayadam D'Yochol Lomri Halucha L'Kulei Alma Achein V'Virchat Asher Galanu Lo Yomar Lechol Bo Matzah Umaror Rak Yomar V'Giyanu Halayla Zeh Ken Hashem Elokeinu Yigeinu V'Sem. In the bracha after Magid, you remove the mention of the matzah if you're not going to have matzah. Okay, fine. Now, the last thing, we're not really, I'll have to summarize it outside, is this whole assumption that if somebody only gets a little sick, that they still need to push themselves to have matzah, assumes that you have to force yourself to get even a little bit sick for mitzvot, right? And that's a whole sugya in and of itself, is how sick do you have to get, right? I mean, what are we talking about? If someone's going to have stomachache, if someone's going to have digestion problems, if someone is going to hurt their colon down the line, right? What are we talking about? How sick do you have to get? So again, obviously, if someone is going to, if it's bikoch nevesh, obviously you're potter. What about sick? So basically, I'll summarize it outside. Number 22, the Gemara brings the case of Rabbi Yehuda, who had an extreme sensitivity to wine. So he used to have, when he would have the Arba Kosas on Pesach, he would have a headache from Pesach to Shavuos, right? So you see, on the one hand, that some Gemaras imply that you have to get pretty sick, right? You have to have a 7-week headache. Right? That's a bit extreme. And Shulchan Aruch in 23 says that if someone has wine and does bother him or he really doesn't like it, he still has to push himself to have Arba Kosos. Mishnah Berurah says, yeah, but that's because you only get a headache, but you don't actually, you're not Nofel Mishkov, you're not incapacitated. If you're incapacitated, you wouldn't be Chayiv. Now, in the Sharat Zion, he implies that this is only because it's not Derecherus, which implies that it's unique to Arba Kosos. But in 26, the Mishnah Berurah seems to say, no, that's not really how it works. Which is, no, if you really are going to get sick in 26 and 27, he does sound like, no, if you're going to have a headache, fine, that's not called getting sick. If you're going to be incapacitated, that really is a problem. Now, some of the Besamim Rosh, which is the forged book in the name of the Rush, right, suggests that, yeah, anytime you are in pain, your potter from mitzvah is based on mitzvah by sukkah. Right, the fact that by sukkah, in fact, if you have a headache, you're allowed to leave the sukkah. But Rov Poskim say, no, that's not true. Right, a mere headache, a mere stomach ache, that's not what it is. But what is it? So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, basically, look, we have a rule that you don't have to spend more than a fifth of your money on a mitzvah. So Rav Moshe says, look, if you're going to get sick, like really sick, so that's right, just like you'd be putter if you were going to lose money for a mitzvah. So you're putter if you're going to make yourself really sick. So what's the line? The line is between, a little bit of a stomach ache, a little bit of a headache, and really sick. Where exactly you draw the line, I'm not sure, right? Ask your posek. But basically, all the acharim go in this general direction, which is if someone can handle a little bit of wheat, so if he's just going to have a little bit of discomfort, so you actually do have to push yourself. If you're really going to get sick, then no, being actually sick is a p'tur for mitzvah. And I gave you the summary at the end from Minchas Asher. Is he said tamsira dvarim? He says basically he has four standards. Cholosh yesh bo sakana, it's usher for you to be kind mitzvos. If sakana is aver, you're going to lose a limb. It's usher. Then cholosh yesh bo sakana. So he says if you're actually going to be sick, you're going to be incapacitated, you're going to be in bed for a few weeks. So then, in theory, he thinks you're allowed to be machmir if you want to, but you have no chiyuv to. And sar ba'alma, if it's just a little bit of discomfort, but it's not like long-lasting medical pain, so then, economics, you have to have a stomach ache, big deal. A lot of people have stomach aches after they eat matzah, it's not because they have gluten, right, sensitivity to gluten, it's because they get sick. And therefore, in the next shuv on the left, he says, therefore, you should ask a doctor, right? Ask a rabbi, ask a doctor. Figure out how much they can have, how sick they're going to get, and make a decision based on that. Okay, so we have to get to Mara. But again, to summarize, the questions you have to deal with are, what is the status of oats? Which oats can you do? Were they pre-cooked or not? This potential problem of Greira, the question of if you don't have matzah at all, what bracha do you make? That was just the parenthetical comment. And if someone can, in fact, have wheat, so what do you do? How sick do you have to get? So basically, the postman say, if you're really sick, you're patur. If you're just uncomfortable, then you would be chayiv. But everyone says, even presumably those people, can be makel on the most makel shiurim of Rav Chaim Noah. And if you're only going to be able to have one kezias have at the end, where exactly you draw the lines and all these things, you have to ask your posek and your doctor to figure out practically how to implement this halacha l'maisin. Again, I'm not poskening. I'm just laying out the potential questions the posek have to deal with to answer the shayla. Okay.
Sure, thank you.